Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
To my successor, whoever he or she may be. Number one, stay close to the Americans, stick up for the Ukrainians, stick up for freedom and democracy everywhere.
Politics in general has taken total leave of its senses.
Changing one man at the top of the Tory party won't make any difference. It won't fix the problems. Let's have a fresh start for Britain. Let's have a real change of government.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Stephen Carroll.
And I'm Caroline Hepke. Coming up on today's programme, as the price of goods in shops rises at the fastest pace in 17 years, we hear from the former Deputy Governor of the Bank of England, Charlie Bean.
Plus, we'll be counting down to the end of the Tory leadership race with our reporter, Lizzie Burden. But first, Boris Johnson's days in number 10 rapidly coming to an end as we get the result of the leadership contest, of course, on Monday. Despite fierce criticism that he hasn't acted in recent weeks on the cost of living crisis, the outgoing Prime Minister is insisting that he isn't leaving behind a country that's broken.
Yes, it is absolutely true that because of Putin's war in Ukraine, we have pressures on the cost of living. But we have the financial strength to get through them. And what we are also doing is making sure that we have the long-term British energy supplies that we need to get our people through.
So Boris Johnson, that's an extract of an interview that he gave earlier on today. He kind of struggled a bit in it, honestly, to talk about his legacy. Like he was speaking outside a police station, so he did talk about policing.
Yes.
But he didn't really have an awful lot else to say in terms of what he did as Prime Minister. Now
Hang on, defenders will simply point to the vaccine rollout.
Well, exactly,
and the war in Ukraine and those sorts of obvious things. But yes, perhaps, I mean, this farewell tour, as it was dubbed, perhaps lacking a bit of energy.
Yeah, it certainly was. It was a not characteristic performance, I think we can say, from Boris Johnson. Well, perhaps his mind is elsewhere already.
Yeah, perhaps it is. On what he may do after his prime ministership. I mean, yes, there's lots of talk about whether he will return for another run. And then you have people like Rory Stewart, of course, who went up against him for Tory leadership back in 29, really putting the boot in, saying that he lost his job because he was a terrible prime minister, in Rory Stewart's words, and he lost his job because of deep flaws of character. And yet, what do other prime ministers do when they go write their memoirs, in the shed, as Cameron did, or create a foundation like Tony Blair?
True, and or Theresa May being a very, prominent backbencher as well, I suppose, still playing a role in politics as well. And he does say that his intention is to return to stay as a backbencher. So there you go. Plenty of options ahead for Boris Johnson. We've got our economics and government correspondent Lizzie Burden with us in studio as well. Lizzie, interesting to hear Boris Johnson say the UK has the financial resilience to deal with the cost of living crisis. Does it?
Well, he's always said that the future of the UK is golden. I wouldn't expect anything other than a Tiggerish view of the future. It depends how they reform the city post-Brexit. It depends how the next Prime Minister handles the economy, given that the Bank of England's seeing a recession on the horizon. It hasn't got much choice but to hike interest rates again and again and to inflict this pain on the economy. So I'd say that he's probably being a bit optimistic there. You ask about what Boris Johnson's going to do after this. I think he's going to find the US speaker circuit very lucrative, especially given that the Republicans think of him as baby Trump. And that might be very good at funding his wife's taste in gold wallpaper.
Oh, okay. I like that comment. Lizzie Burton with a little swipe at the wife of the Prime Minister. Okay. Look, what about, I mean, so he, yes, his time in office ending in perhaps a bit of a whimper. Having said that, the in tray for the next Prime Minister is utterly groaning. The former Bank of England Deputy Governor Charlie Bean was in the studio with us this morning. We're going to bring you the full interview later on. But he was very sceptical about Truss's tax cut plans. He said he did see recession coming. We spent quite a lot of time talking about how long, how deep, and that there would need to be a lot more government support for households. So, you know, if it is Liz Truss, and Charlie Bean was talking very much about it being Liz Truss, then there's a lot to do, a lot of spending to be done.
Yeah, he said that he's worried that Liz Truss's tax cuts aren't targeted. He said that the UK can stomach a large but short-lived deficit, but if it lasts for even longer, then it's probably more unsustainable. By which I think he means that it's if you have tax cuts to try and support people, that's more of a permanent thing. Whereas if you do short-term handouts, then it's less of a risk in terms of the UK's reputation as being fiscally disciplined. And this is what Rishi Sunak was referring to in that interview with the FT today.
Yeah,
he referred to Mark Carney talking about the UK's reliance on the kindness of strangers to fund its deficits. And so, you know, if people lose faith in Britain's economic credibility, it's going to be harder to keep on funding the borrowing.
Well, and one of the threads of thought, I think, around this that's really interesting is this idea that, for one, you need to have a more long-term prime minister in place, you know, so that you don't lose that sort of credibility. I mean, we did tot up, it's four prime ministers in the last 6 years.
Yeah, and, you know, that sort of change can't be good for when you're trying to inspire confidence in markets at a very difficult time for the UK as well. Another big issue that we know that there's going to be on that in tray, of course, energy, the windfall tax, a policy already in place, but a Bloomberg scoop today estimating that UK gas and electricity producers may make excess profits totaling as much as £170 billion. Over the next 2 years. Are we going to see a big new debate, Lizzie, about the windfall tax?
Well, this is a big scoop. I've just first of all got to take my hat off to Alex Wickham and Todd Gillespie for this one. It really puts pressure on whoever is the next Prime Minister to either, or both, increase the windfall tax that's already on oil and gas producers, but potentially extend it as well to include power generators. Truss has repeatedly ruled out a windfall tax. She says that it creates the wrong message to investors. But then Kwasi Kwarteng as well, the guy who's tipped to be her chancellor, has said that he's opposed to them on principle. So it doesn't look likely that she would do this. But by these figures, if the current rate of windfall tax, 25%, were continued, it would rake in tens of billions of pounds for the Treasury, which could be spent on helping people through the energy crisis this winter. And we know that their bills are set to triple from the point they were at this time last year.
Yeah, and I also think it's interesting, how are voters going to take this? Because we're on the last day of August. It feels, you know, both like an eternity, but also quite a short time of 6 weeks of this kind of intensive hustings. Lots of navel gazing by the Conservative Party. But now we're going to get basically a new Prime Minister and lots of new thinking around, you know, the crisis in the UK. Goldman Sachs talking about 22% inflation in the coming months. I mean, we've just gone up and up and up in terms of the estimation of inflation, and voters are highly sensitive and aware of this.
Yeah, up and up and up. The BOE had seen 13%, then Citi said 18%. Now you've got this 22%, and to put it into context, the retail price index hit 26% in 1975 because of the oil shock. So this, if it came true, would be approaching that level.
But the oil shock only lasted a few weeks.
Yeah. And remember, we had all these questions about whether this was like the 1970s, and officials always responded, look, this will be a high peak, but it won't last as long. And yet, what this forecast, even if it's an aggressive one, what it shows is that the peak for inflation might probably be later and last longer. And that's what's painful.
you know, you talked about Rishi Sunak in the Financial Times today and this whole issue of confidence in the markets. This is a bit of a, it feels like a bit of a last ditch attempt from Rishi Sunak to have an impact on this race at all.
He's preaching to the choir, isn't he?
Yeah.
Telling, I think all FT, most FT readers would probably agree with his economics, right? Regardless of whether he's economically right, the Truss is trying to appeal to the grassroots Conservatives, and the polling shows that she's doing that successfully so far. Sunak's been warning that Truss's tax cuts could drive up borrowing costs if markets lose faith in the British economy. And as I said before, if the Tories lose their reputation for fiscal discipline, he says in this article that they'd lose one of their biggest advantages over Labour. But really, there's a brilliant Bloomberg editorial about this on the Terminal today, about what, Caroline, you said it's navel-gazing. Really, what's needed, says this editorial, is a longer-term strategy focused on, and I'm quoting, energy security, decarbonisation and economic growth. We all know that the candidates tend to campaign in poetry, govern in prose. Be interesting to see how much everything changes when we know who's actually going to be in number 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine, isn't it, that the difficulties for the UK economy have just gotten bigger after a pandemic, like the biggest crisis in 100 years. It's sort of, to me, I still feel like I have to stand back and think that this is pretty staggering. You know, we thought there was going to be a massive recession that was swerved by a lot of government spending. Anyway, do you think we're going to hear anything different? Because, of course, there is the 12th and final husting taking place in London this evening.
I want to know what if fantasy host Lizzie Burden, if you were doing this, what's the question you'd be really trying to get an answer to if you were hosting the hustings?
For me, and this might be an age thing, but I think a huge crisis in Britain right now is the housing market.
Yes.
If you want to buy a home, you're pretty much, I don't know if I can say this on this podcast, screwed. You've had both Liz Truss saying that she wouldn't commit to the 300,000 homes, new homes a year target, Rishi Sunak saying that he wouldn't build on the green belt. It's this shortage of housing that has consistently propped up house prices. So on the one hand, how are the candidates going to prevent a crash in house prices? And on the other hand, how are they going to help people who are desperate to get on the property ladder? Because, of course, that competition in the rental market is driving up rents, and it's adding to the cost of living crisis, making this a vicious cycle.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I mean, any of my friends who are under the age of 40, you know, you can draw a red line of and it is generational. Those who can buy or perhaps, you know, rent a decent place, and those who can't.
And the knock-on effect, as you say, through the rental market, something that, you know, it means that you can often find people unable to save because their rents are so high, and that comes down to the supply issue and the issues further up chain as well. And typically, the Conservative Party normally laser-focused on the housing market.
Yeah, we've had the pandemic stamp duty holiday, the Help to Buy scheme. They usually prop up the housing market.
Yeah.
But when you've got all the money being pumped into tax cuts, or as Liz Truss calls them, handouts, what'll be left?
Lizzie, so interesting. Lizzie Burden, though, our economics and government correspondent, with her top question for the hosting.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Now, the next British Prime Minister faces a daunting task, steering the UK as the economy is expected to go into a prolonged recession.
Yeah, the cost of living crisis, workers striking for higher pay, and an inflation rate that Goldman Sachs says could hit 22%. But how bad a recession could it be?
Well, earlier, Tom McKenzie and I were speaking to Sir Charlie Bean, Professor of Economics at the London School of Economics, of course, well known as the former Bank of England Deputy Governor for Monetary Policy, also a member of the Budget Responsibility Committee at the OBR. We asked him whether he thinks a recession is looming for the UK.
Clearly, it's a pretty challenging environment. We've had this very large, predominantly external shock associated with the war in Ukraine and its implications for both energy and food prices. And on top of that, the UK labour market was already pretty tight at the start of this year. So the economy would have had to cool a bit anyway, to take that on board, even without the external shock. The best you could hope for is a period of very subdued or stagnant growth.
Five quarters of contraction?
Well, you can have something that's much deeper and shorter, or shallower and longer, and we'll see what comes out. And the key thing I would want to stress, listeners obviously want predictions.
Yes.
And the sort of environment that we have here, there is so much uncertainty about particularly what will happen in the Ukraine and to gas prices and so forth, that makes it especially precarious trying to make hard and fast predictions.
But, so do you think it's going to be shallow and long or deeper and shorter?
If anything, I would think it would be deeper and actually perhaps longer than some people fear. In particular, I think it may take more to squeeze inflationary pressures, domestically generated inflationary pressures, out of the UK. What we're seeing is people in the labour market, union bargainers, so forth, responding to the very high inflation by saying, yeah, we want to be protected and we want wage increases. And because the labour market's tight, they're more likely to be able to push for that. And inevitably, to lean back on that, that means the bank will have to keep policy tighter for longer. And I do think people have underestimated the extent of real wage resistance that we may see. This was something that was important in the 70s, with people trying to protect their living standards. A lot of focus on inflation expectations, but it's this response to what is already happening, the squeeze, which I think people have underestimated its significance.
So you think there is a higher risk of a deep recession? You think there's an underestimating the risks around the stickiness of wages, the increase of wages, given that need for workers to see higher pay packages to compensate for that very high inflation? Where does that leave your view then on rates, peak rates from the Bank of England?
Well, again, exactly where rates go depend on all these highly uncertain events, particularly what happens in Ukraine, what's happened to gas prices, stuff like that. So I'm very loath to say, you know, 4% is the peak or whatever, but I do think it's plausible to think rates may have to go somewhat higher and for somewhat longer than perhaps people are factoring in.
Well, now 4.75 is where the markets are pricing the kind of peak, 4.75%.
I mean, that may be a perfectly plausible outcome. But we shouldn't rule out higher outcomes, possibly. We may be lucky, we may get away with something lower. As far as the bank is concerned, this is a sort of time and they shouldn't be indulging in forward guidance. They really don't know where they're going to end up, and they have to respond to how things are developing on the ground. Mm. We did during the pandemic, just as governments do during wartime.
Do we have the fiscal space to do that?
I think we have the fiscal space for temporary borrowing. What worries me about Liz Truss's proposals during the campaign, whether what she'll go through with, of course, is another matter. But she is talking about a permanent reduction in taxes relative to what was planned. By removing the increase in national insurance, which, remember, was to pay for an increase in health and social care spending, I mean, the corporate tax increase. They're intended to be permanent. And the public finances are highly unlikely to have room to allow for that permanent increase in tax support that's being provided.
That's very interesting on the fiscal headroom. In terms of the help then for households, can we put some numbers around it? For example, Blanche Flower, Lord Sicker and Sheffield Professor Murphy have argued in the FT today that it's quite likely that a further £200 billion will be necessary in the coming year if the meltdown of the economy is to be avoided. What sort of figure would you put on it?
Well, I mean, £200 billion is a lot. It goes back to what I said before. A lot depends on what happens to gas prices, so how long the support needs to be in place. But we are certainly talking orders of magnitude which are similar to the support that was provided during the pandemic. So the furlough scheme, for instance, cost $70 billion. There was also support for businesses and so forth. So something at least in the 100 makes sense to me. Yeah. But as I say, I think that is certainly part financeable through the markets, providing it's clearly temporary and understood to be temporary. And that, I think, is a key challenge for the government coming in, that it has to credibly make its fiscal actions temporary.
And is that where there's concern around the market reaction? So if they make it clear that this response is temporary in nature, as you would advocate, versus longer term, that is less of a risk in terms of the markets turning on the UK economy. We had Sunak coming out today saying that Liz Truss's proposals risk the markets, you know, essentially turning on the UK economy, looking at the UK economy as a basket case. I'm paraphrasing. But is there a real concern at this point?
Yes, I think that's right. If you have a policy response which is temporary, a response to this shock, I think market participants understand why you're doing it, and providing you're committing to responsible fiscal policies after the shock has passed, getting the debt to GDP ratio back down slowly, that has an entirely sensible plan. I think the problem with Liz Truss's plans at the moment, aside from the fact that what she's suggesting doesn't really direct support at those people who need it most, the poorer households and so forth, is, as I say, this this permanence, and it's not of obviously the scale either. Now, if market participants start doubting the commitment of the government to running fiscally responsible policies in the medium term, if you also couple it with suggestions, again, to review the mandate of the Bank of England, and they're not going to look at an Office of Budget Responsibility forecast and so on, it starts raising questions about the institutional framework within which policy is being made. And that those seem to me exactly the sort of environments where investors might start saying, well, I'm not so sure the UK is such a good place to put my investments anymore, as opposed to plenty of the other countries around the world where they could do it. So I do think there is a risk there.
I want to kind of tie in a lot of your thoughts around the BOE's response, the fiscal response, into what's happening with the pound, which is down about 14% year-to-date against the US dollar at 116, and some FX strategists say 115, maybe even one, maybe even parity by the end of the year. How concerned should the BOE be, particularly as we see yields, gilt yields up, pound down, around the prospects of sterling and a potential sterling crisis?
Well, it's certainly something they need to factor into their assessment of the inflation outlook. And there's quite a lot of general sort of chit-chat along the lines of, well, this is an external shock that the bank can't do anything about. Raising interest rates is not going to affect energy prices and so forth. A lot of people forget that one of the most direct channels through which monetary policy affects inflation is through the exchange rate. Now, some of the weakness of sterling obviously reflects actually the strength of the dollar, which has been strong against many currencies and tends to play a role of a safe haven during bad times. But some of it, I think, also reflects growing doubts about the UK's prospects and policies. And I think for the MPC, they will certainly be very conscious of the importance of not letting sterling fall sharply. And that will weigh quite heavily, I think, in their coming decisions.
So that was Sir Charlie Bean speaking about recession, energy prices, how the next Prime Minister and the Bank of England should deal with all of the UK's challenges.
So we also have coming up later, of course, the last Conservative Party hustings happening in Wembley Arena in London. LBC's Nick Ferrari hosting that one. The last chance for Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak to face off.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.